Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Elshai, ready to dance.
So, Tim, I didn't predict when we started this program that professional dance would be a subject matter.
It brought me great joy, John, to text you and say, hey, I've got a great guest. He's a dancer. And I was in my head, will John go for it? And I thought, you know, I think he will, because who can deny that a great, you know, in this case, hip-hop dancer, Tony Bellissimo.
A Buffalo, New York native.
Yes, yes. He was now based out of Los Angeles and travels the country teaching dance, and has traveled the country many times performing in front of, you know, arena crowds with the likes of, you know, Chris Brown, Rihanna. He is now in the Michael Jackson movie. And we'll go on in the interview. Who could ever deny that that's not one of the most athletic things a person could possibly do?
Right, right.
I don't know about you, but I can't do it.
No. Right. But you know, I look forward to the conversation with Tony and the research that I've done, not only on Tony, but on the professional dance category. Absolutely, it is a sport. Absolutely, obviously, it's professionally, because he's built a career around dance. And then, you know, even in our world here on Skin in the Game, you know, we've talked now about new professional dance and cheer leagues, right? And we spoke to our friends at Flow TV. I mean, one of their biggest categories for viewership is professional dance and professional cheer.
It's cheer, yeah.
So it's definitely growing, and look forward to sitting down with Tony and talking about where his career has led him and where his career will continue to lead him, which I guess is right now on the silver screen.
I mean, he's been in a bunch of movies, but Michael Jackson biopic, yeah. He's in that, and wow. he's one of the thriller dancers.
Wow, that's great.
Which is, yeah, anybody who's in the dance industry knows just how cool, just how iconic that is.
Right. Well, looking forward to bringing our guest on here in a few moments. But before that, there are some news and some updates on things we've been discussing here on Skin in the Game. And just most recently, you know, if you recall, we had a guest on with the trading card, with Panini.
Yeah,
on the trading
card. Tracy Hackler, who's a senior brand manager.
Yeah, and so this came across my desk because we were talking about trading cards and the growth of the collectibles. And most recently, there was a Josh Allen trading card that was traded or sold for $1.35 million.
This is a brand new card.
This is crazy.
It is one of a kind, quite literally one of a kind, a one of one card. So the story is a grandma in Arizona brought her grandsons shopping, or at least went shopping, and bought a, you know, box of Topps trading cards, football trading cards, for her grandsons. And, you know, when they opened it up, there you have a gold NFL Shield Josh Allen autographed card, one of one.
One of one, wow.
Yeah, so they went to Fanatics, sold it at auction, $1.35 million. The money is being split among the three grandsons.
It sounds like she won the, good for her. It sounds to me as if she unwrapped the Willy Wonka golden ticket.
That's exactly what she did, except Willy Wonka had a few golden tickets. This would be if there was just one, and you really do get the entire factory.
Wow. So that industry, if you go back to the interview with Tracy and about where the trends are and the continue to go, that's crazy. So, you know, there's now a $1.35 million trading card in someone's home who obviously is a big Josh Allen fan.
I sure hope they're a big Josh Allen fan. Hey, speaking of, well, Josh Allen, the Buffalo Bills, recent Skin in the Game interviewees. John, I was hanging out with Brandon Steiner of mm-hmm. Collectibles Exchange.
Yeah, right.
Brandon is the guy who took over the now former Highmark Stadium, the Buffalo Bills.
And before that, Yankee Stadium.
Old Stadium, right. Before that, Yankee Stadium, yeah. and a lot of other venues mm-hmm. as well. And, you know, had the kind of a cool job of going into that stadium and figuring out, what can we sell from here? What can we, you know, what can we get construction workers in here, pull out and sell. So, you know, there's things like goalposts, which they turned into, well, among other things, they turned them into pencil holders,
right?
Pencil cups, the turf, right? Which is being sliced up and framed and sold in different ways. Seats, bleachers, seat backs. But I was hanging out with Brandon at Dave and Adam's Card World, which is located where we are here in Buffalo. It's a big national entity, happened to be based about 10 minutes from where we sit. And so we had Brandon, Thurman Thomas, NFL Hall of Fame running back from the Buffalo Bills, and NFL Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly. So we had Jim, Thurman, Brandon at Dave and Adams, and they had a signing there. So talk about a great way to sell benches and seat backs. Get Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas sitting at a table. You know, come buy a bench, put it in your truck, and you'll have an autograph from those two guys on it.
That's cool.
It was cool to see, you know, a few things. One is, you know, just the supply and demand and how that'll drive it. But another one, and this is something you don't think about too much, and it's a little detail, how much appreciation people have to Thurman and especially Jim for how carefully they sign their autograph on these items. And tiny detail, but I thought this was fascinating. Brandon was admiring Jim's signature, you know, and a big J, big K, big loop, you know, Hall of Fame with the year, all of those things. And I said to him, is this unusual for, you know, for an athlete to, you know, to sign so carefully to, you know, essentially turn a signature into art? And he said, you know, for the older guys, which Jim would be included, no. But for the new guys, yeah, they often scribble.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a lot of value placed even on the, you know, the delivery, the final product of the signature too.
Right. So speaking of collectibles, you had a chance to talk to Brandon. Any new projects that he has? Any new stadiums? There's a new stadium going up in Cleveland. There's a new stadium going up in Kansas City. There's a new stadium going up in Nashville. Any sneak peek on what might be next?
No, you know, he seems at the moment really focused on wrapping up Buffalo, and he's very close. In fact, I think, you know, I saw him on what might be his last official trip to Buffalo. At the moment, they're out there selling benches and in seats from the old Highmark Stadium. But we're gonna keep in touch, and I'm gonna find out for you.
Yeah,
I'm gonna find out for you because, yeah, there are a whole lot of stadiums out there with rabid fan bases who might just like to buy some seats.
Yeah, and we're going to, in an upcoming episode, Jim, I think it is time that we kind of revisit kind of the state of new stadium construction, because, you know, when we started this program, you know, it might have been talking a little bit about a new stadium in Buffalo and a new stadium in Washington, D.C., just to talk about how quickly this industry is changing. There's probably 7 or 8 new facilities that have announced their breaking ground. And again, a lot of these are being funded by tax dollars. So we do need to revisit that conversation on what the state of the state is with arena and stadium construction.
And the prices and the public contribution, John, both keep going up too. You know, I remember when the government committed $850 million, that's state and county, to the Buffalo Bills Stadium.
And at that time, that was record.
Record. For maybe, we'd have to look it up, but maybe a month.
Yeah.
And then Nashville, Tennessee bested that record.
Yeah.
Almost immediately.
Right. So with that, we do need to get to our guest, and we're going to segue from talking stadiums to dance,
which go together really well, as I bet you we find out in this conversation. Very excited to bring on Tony Bellissimo, a native of Buffalo, New York, who did the thing. He packed his bags. He moved to Hollywood, and he made it in Los Angeles as one of the top dancers in the country and in the world. So we're going to dig into that next. Tony, you and I have known each other a long time. So thrilled to have you on the program. So thank you for joining us. I'm going to start just by kind of setting the stage here with how you went from being a kid in Buffalo, New York, to one of the leaders in the dance industry based out of Los Angeles. You work for 24/7 Dance Convention, and there's a line, a really simple line from the company's website that said, Tony Bellissimo is a dynamic professional entertainer who left his hometown of Buffalo, New York to make his mark in the entertainment industry. And, you know, it's like, yeah, that sounds like the, you know, the start of a good movie pitch, you know, if the next few lines are compelling. And I know they are. What are the next few lines of that? Tell us about the journey that got you to where you are today.
First of all, thank you for having me, both gentlemen. I really appreciate it. This is really cool to connect with Skin in the Game. And this is exciting for me just to be here and speak with you. And Tim, for our history, we know it has been over almost two decades. So I really appreciate you still having interest in what I'm doing, my Skin in the Game. So I appreciate that.
You got it.
Okay. So I would not be who I am if I was not from Buffalo. I take Buffalo so serious and I love Buffalo. I even going back to my ancestry with Teresa Bellissimo and the Anchor Bar. For me, Buffalo is such a unbelievable space of sports and family and just community. And coming up in that area, being trained at a dance studio called the Future Dance Center, run by and owned by Denise and Gino Vaccaro, they gave me the skills and keys of discipline through dance to succeed and follow my goals. And that was what you read was, I want to be a dynamic professional entertainer. I'm not just a dancer. I'm an actor, producer, director. So there's a lot there, but dance and the disciplines of dance helped me springboard into the Los Angeles network, into the camps of New York City and Miami and Atlanta to make my way. But I always have the roots of Buffalo there. Again, I wouldn't be the performer if I didn't dance at Thursday in the Square. If I wasn't performing or battling down in the Verve in Buffalo, New York, or traveling to different competitions in the Niagara Falls Convention Center, or just training endlessly after going to hockey practice at the Hamburg Hawks or playing for Frontier High School lacrosse and varsity soccer. So, I mean, the skills from everything I did helped lead me to where I'm at today. Even when I coach and teach now, what the kids are feeling when I'm teaching them is, and we'll get to it all, I think, but you're feeling a lot of sports coaching, positive reinforcement, administrative background. And Tim, you remember that my parents, they owned, and my mom owned and created We Folk Childcare, Performing Arts Childcare, right there on Route 5, right before the city of Buffalo. For 35 years, she ran that school. So there's even, I have a background in like adolescent development. So taking that dance training, the disciplines of dance, the techniques of dance, and then a great coaching that I got through all my adolescence at youth sports. I now am, when I walk into a youth program to teach kids dance, it's not just dance, it's achieving goals and having the ability to work hard for yourself using the platform of dance to help them.
Tony, you played some hockey as a kid. You played some baseball as a kid. Where was that spark that said, okay, this is for me? Was there a moment that dance was, you know, you really got that passion? What was that moment?
Yeah, John, so early in my life, I was always a performer and I was a great mimic. So I had a pretty cool computer. The way my brain works is that I could copy what I saw more with my eyes than anything else. When I went through the eyes and then the physical motion, I was great at remembering and the sequence of those steps. So whether it was how to set up a slap shot or how to, you know, bounce a puck off the boards, or how to do a pas de bourrée double turn, which is a dance term. Like I would learn the footwork and go through it. I feel like for me, the love of it really started to take off once I was able to perform for live crowds and feel the energy. Essentially, I always was looking for crowd energy. I always liked to hear energy come from a crowd. So therefore, making a defensive stop, you know, as a long stick midi playing lacrosse was like huge for me. I would love to see the ball get turned over and get it down to my attackman and let them score. And but then just transitioning, John, and really jumping in the car and changing clothes and then driving to a studio and putting 3 more hours of energy into a dance class and being a part of the music and the movement. It was a perfect bottleneck timeline for how much energy I possess in my body to be where I'm at. Yeah, to your point, it's just I fell in love with it right away. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've always been a part of it. There was a pivotal moment, though, in my life where I was going to either play more varsity lacrosse and go to college for lacrosse or really tap into my dancing. And one of my friends who teased me about dancing at times, he looked at me and sincerely was like, dude, we love you, man. Like you're good at sports, but you are unbelievable at dancing. Mm-hmm. And I was very young, but it was very crazy that he said that to me. to know that people like show up at you for you at the most random time. And if you really listen to them, they're going to give you their truth. And so I decided to make a pivotal decision to, I'm going to slow down the sports and hone in, just focus on dance, which then would lead me to the beginning of my career, which started on So You Think You Can Dance. And by end of 2009 or beginning of 2009 is when I really made my big splash into the entertainment industry.
I remember that, Tony, so well. I want to take you back to, you know, just a year or two before So You Think You Can Dance. When you were a kid in high school, you know, when you were still playing those varsity sports and excelling there, and you were dancing with Future Dance Center and you'd take the stage, you were such a star. And I know everybody's told you that, but I still to this day, so many years later, I remember you watching you on that stage and just how you lit up the stage and the people around you too, the other dancers around you. How did the exhilaration of, you know, making a great play, we'll say on the lacrosse field or maybe on the ice, compare to putting on a great show on a dance stage?
You know, the word that we share amongst both fields is chemistry, right? So chemistry, we talk about chemistry a lot. A good team, you can see chemistry within the passing, within the handshakes, within a lot of the energy that happens on field or ice or wherever, whichever sports you're doing. Same thing with dance. When there's a chemistry and there's a flow between the dancers, the music, the choreography that was set by our good coaches and choreographers, there's such a feeling. And I think that's the feeling that you're essentially looking for, that you're in a flow state and it's become so fun. That's what you're seeing. I'm having fun. Same thing when I'm with my friends and we're running, you know, our plays and going through all the everything we practiced on the practice field to get it into the game and then run those plays. Or as simple as being called off the bench. I was varsity soccer. I walked on the team. On the offseason in the fall for my junior year of high school, Ostrander was like, you need to, he was a coach at Frontier at the time. He goes, if you're not going to play football and run your legs, I need you to be either doing track or soccer to keep yourself ready for winter lacrosse and then get ready for spring lacrosse and need you to be sharp to go on your legs. So what are you going to do in the fall? I want you to do something. And I think that's what was really, really fun for me is like always learning new things and learning new skills with the body, remembering how it feels to go through the body, how to nurture the knees and ankles and take care of it, the recovery. So I had all that training to do all that. I think it's just really been an awesome like correlation between for my life as an athlete, being both dancer, performer, and then, you know, in the game as part of a team.
Yeah. And do you see yourself more as the norm in the professional dance community, or are you the exception of someone who transferred those skills from the pitch or the field or the ice onto the dance floor?
I would tell you now, John, more than ever, that there are more men like me in the business. A lot of them have basketball as the main sport that they would be more commonly like attached to. But for me, I think just growing up in Buffalo, I was more geared towards the East Coast sports that were like, right. You know, John, I like to hit. I'm a hitter. I like to hit things. Right. And some of my friends even have transitioned from dancers into sports agents or sports management, which is because they love the world so much, but they learn how to coach and break down to someone, another human, how to understand how to move their body. So I'm not an anomaly, but as far as for the size that I am, because I'm almost a little shy of 6'4", 200 pounds, and I've been doing it for many years at a high rate. And then, John, my style of dance is very, very athletic. People take my class and they're very exhausted because you're using muscles you're not used to doing, dropping, jumping, moving, sliding. There's a lot that's happening there within the hip hop culture, freestyle, funk style that I live and gravitate to. It's a very athletic style. And that's partially from my training. I trained with men and women who asked a lot of me. Jump from here, land here, roll here. Can you do a flip here? Can you do this? Can you slide here? Can you pick this person up? And on that, you have to do it on time, on command. Everyone has like unspoken communication with knowing the agenda. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not an anomaly, but I'm really good at what I do.
Yeah, and as far as coming up in team sports, I mean, first of all, I'm looking to Tim. There's no doubt that dance is athletic and sometimes more athletic than any other sport. But I think, Tony, the question for you is, how does that competitiveness that comes from team sports, how does that kind of influence your dance?
It's an awesome question. And I have kind of thought about this coming into this chat that we were going to have about this topic. How has competitiveness really affected me in dance as well, you know, from sports? My favorite athlete of all time, and I love Josh Allen, but my favorite athlete of all time is Kobe Bryant. Mm. And there's a quote from Kobe, and it was, someone asked him, Kobe, what makes the greats great? And he goes, like, that's an easy answer. He goes, it's love. If you love it, then you'll just get up and you'll train for it. You'll do it. That's the competitiveness for me, John.
Yeah.
Who's going to get up and work as hard as me? Who's going to get up and make the phone calls? Who's going to reach out? Who's going to study the tape? Like a Peyton Manning, like I study tape. Like I watch Fred Astaire's, the Gene Kelly's, the Bob Fosse's, the Michael Jackson's, the Janet Jackson's. I watched the Justin Timberlake's, the Chris Brown's until I was next to Chris or next to Justin, knowing the gestures, the moves, the delivery, the cadence, the pocket, we call it, of how they move. So studying tape, just like in sports, mm-hmm. it comes into play. The more you know, the more you're ready for. Preparation is key. The competitiveness for me too was, how much am I going to do, right, John, to get myself ready? So when I walk into an audition, which is essentially a call saying we're going to hire 4 men to dance for Rihanna on a world tour, and 300 huge, strong men show up, how am I going to beat out this group of individuals? Having the best swift moves, understanding the choreography, the size and factor of what I look like is going to come into play for sure. Me being Caucasian, 6'4", it's gonna play because you're gonna want a variety on screen. So then you start narrowing down the competition in the room. But then it comes down to like, who's gonna really hit it? And I'm very confident with all the training that I've done and going out for so many auditions in my life and not making it, John. Yeah. Getting cut, being told no, try again. And that was always my thing. It's what I teach now to the kids. I say, if I tell you no now, just get up and say, I'm gonna try again. And those who try again will always succeed, and those who stop will fail. That's how it works.
Yeah.
If those who continue to shoot the basketball, it eventually will get in there. And the feeling of making that basketball shot is so good. That's why Steph Curry shot it again, and he did it again. And if he missed, he's like, oh, I can't leave. I can't walk off with the miss. I got to do it again. Same thing with dance. I try to teach it to the dancers now. It's not just about looking cool. It's about feeling good about yourself and what you did in the work. And that competitiveness, that comes from inside, and that also comes from the role models around us. I just happened to lock onto Kobe because my dance teacher, Gino, is a massive Lakers fan. grew up loving Magic Johnson, loved Magic Johnson. Magic was Gino's guy. So when I came up, there was the young 1997 draft, and here comes Kobe Bryant, and I'm literally walked into the studio at Future Dance Center in 96. So my training of my mentors, I was based off of seeing Gino talk about this Kobe Bryant guy for so long. And then I just became obsessed. I have a tattoo on my body to remind me. It's a black mamba on an arrow, which means as I go back, I will now only go forward through the hard work and the competitiveness that I carry. So it's from dance. It's from sports. It's like, it's all woven.
You know, Tony, I'm sitting here thinking about some of the incredible performers that you've danced with, and you mentioned a few of the names: Rihanna, Justin Timberlake at a Super Bowl, Chris Brown, right? And I mean, Brittany, the list goes on. What have you learned about from your own work with them about what makes the greatest the greatest?
Yeah, it's that word love, Tim. It's like the ones who love it. Justin loves to be involved. I love watching Justin be involved with the creative process. I loved hearing Marty Kudelka, who is the choreographer, the steps, the moves, the style behind Justin's movement. A great mentor of mine, someone I look up to and admire and care for very much as a dear friend now. Watching Justin like dive into the creative side of it so much with the Super Bowl, particularly the microphone they created and invented a microphone system that would swing the microphone around and stop on a dime, and this whole mechanical system that they were building, it took a lot of practice. Justin was on that thing for a long time, learning the footwork. You have to be dedicated to what you do, no matter what it is in life, but especially if it's sports or being an Olympian or a long jumper or sprinter or triathlon. Like, you just don't show up to triathlon and say, I'm going to wing it. And with dance and the performers I dance next to, you can see it when they're moving, especially Chris Brown. Now, Chris Brown's a freak athlete. Chris Brown played basketball, him on some pickup basketball games, touring with him. Of course, I felt like an odd man out playing with guys who literally run street ball. And Chris, I feel like he could be a point guard or a small forward on any team right now. He's just so athletic. And he has that thing, John, I was telling you about too, and that he could, and Tim, that he could see something and he can like copy it. It's a very rare computer, a very special skill. The thing about someone just like watching and something happen and then going, okay, I can do that, and copy it and make it happen. That's a, without practice though, he can just do it.
So like a photographic memory, but physical.
Photographic memory, yes, but at the same time, an ability to control all the molecules in your body to answer on call. Right. I'm going to do this. Oh, you did a flip where I swing my right foot in reverse towards my spine and then end back up on my feet. Oh, God, I'm going to try that. He tries it and he can just do it. And Tim, I think there's something too that like I never really got to talk about too much, but I did a TV show called Beyond Dance for MTV. 10 weeks of a very most intense, physical, demanding dance show that never aired. It got shelved and then thrown to the editing floor, essentially. This show asked us as dancers to harness a sidewire to a ramp and then dance off the side of a building 30 stories off the side of LA downtown. And we're dancing and I'm jumping off a building, rappelling, being zipped back to the cables. It was like crazy, but you have core that you have to hold into your strength. The muscles have to be engaged here. You're asking so much of your body. So yeah, I mean, dancing next to the artist, it's insane, but then pushing my body to such an extreme state. I'm in my prime right now. I feel really good. Still dancing like a madman every weekend for 24/7. It's a beautiful thing, but it's the love. Is it. If you love it, then you just do it. You just go. Like you know the football players who love it. Peyton Manning loves football, right? His ending speech, like if you just listen to the way he retired, that last line, God bless football, God bless the United States, God bless all of you. Like it was just like literally weeping out. I love this so much, but I have to step away. The longevity is as long as I want to go because I now have a skill set to take it to coaching and move it on and continue to produce the next generation of dancers.
I want to come to that shortly, but I'm looking at John on this one. There's a question here, John, that you circled for Tony. And I'm thinking this might be the time to ask it because I'm picturing Tony and these other dancers dancing on the side of a building 30 stories up in LA.
Was that Hotel Figueroa? I'm just trying to visualize this, Tony. Where were you? What building were you dancing on?
Yeah, we were. I don't know the building, but we were downtown Los Angeles, and there was a ramp stage built that was on almost a 90 degree. Like slope. It was so steep and we're harnessed and we have hardwired to the back and we're literally jumping off, rappelling and coming back. And it was just one task. That was one weekend. And yeah, it was insane. It was an insane situation. That show is actually the brainchild of Rich and Tone Talega, which is the choreographers for Michael Jackson. And it was during that summer training that I made my first true splash into their life. And they come out of the Bay Area, Richmond, California area. If it's not dancing music, it's sports. They're the Niners. Yeah. They're Niners gang. So they made this show, and that basically was to live and to be like asked, do these tasks, like flip upside down and be hardwired and dance on the roof was part of our task. It was just like insane athletic calls.
But what I love, Tony, what you were also getting at, and we talk a lot on this program about lifetime sports, right? You brought up Peyton Manning, you know, you brought up, you know, NFL, and most of us, you know, the last tackle football game we play is in high school, if we're lucky, right? The last time you hit a hard ball might be in high school, if you're lucky. But sports like dance, sports like hockey, sports like golf, tennis, there's some sports that just lend themselves to being a lifetime sport. And, you know, it just sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but dance is one of those athletic activities that, as long as you quote unquote love it, you can continue to do it.
Especially within the entertainment, because it can transfer, like the competitive age of dance and sports to mirror the recreational sports age are very much tied together.
Yeah.
Pretty much starting from kindergarten till graduate of high school, you're going to run some school programs or travel programs where you can either do more recreational local competitions, or you can take it to a bigger market and really try to see what you can do on a bigger platform. That's very much geared to the youth. Like anything like golf or anything like of tennis, when you love it, you're going to do that for a long time. And dance is one of those things too. My mentors are in their 50s, 60s. Joe Tremaine, like I was touring with Joe Tremaine until he was in his 80s. We're not going to talk about his age because it's confidential, but he is that guy. He danced all the way up. I was with him up until his almost his last couple of dance classes until he was actually honored to become Dr. Joe Tremaine from Arizona College. And so, yeah, it's a longevity thing. Yeah. Cheetah Rivera, one of the most proficient performers on Broadway, who has their own Tony Award situation, Tony Award winning Cheetah Rivera, was dancing, performing all the way up until the curtains came to a close. God rest his soul. Like that's the thing about performers in dance. It's forever. Like, am I flipping off the side of a building right now? No, sir. No, but I'm using my skills in other ways now to continue to push my career forward.
The one thing on a professional level, and you know, while someone like Peyton Manning can play in a market like Indianapolis, it seems to me professionally, and let me know if it's changed, but it really, to get to that level, to get to that pinnacle where I believe your career is and has been, is it New York? Is it LA? Is it really limited to those markets?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Hasn't changed.
It's an out of sight, out of mind type of situation. You could probably be the best dancer in Virginia, but it's only going to get you so far. If you want to dance with, you got to be in the city where you're accessible and usable. Yeah. Right, John? If I call a rehearsal to be tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in North Hollywood and you're in Buffalo, it's going to be a really hard call time for you. Right. So therefore, I can't use you. You could be amazing, but I can't use you. Yeah. So out of sight, out of mind. So that also comes with being a social network of your own self, learning how to run a business. That's where we jump from competitiveness to business. And that's also where I learned from my mentor, Joe Tremaine. There's show and then there's business. Without the business, there's no show. And without the show, there's no business. Right. That's why you call it show business. So that's where that comes into play. And then how are you competitive there? John, so you could be best friends with these guys over here, but you get hired on a job to tour the country with four individuals you've never met before. Now you're part of this packed team. You got to travel from city to city. I've been in more hockey arenas than I could ever imagine I would ever be in, ever. If I played hockey up until the point where I stopped playing, which is about high school level, where now I'm traveling, I'm on these massive stages in front of thousands of people screaming, touring this country, and I have guys with me I've never grew up with, I have no chemistry with, but I have to build it with them. And that's part of the whole like aspect of, yeah, when you're at pro level, I think there's a certain window, right? And that's why I also talk about the college aspect of dance as well. But there's like, even college is taking the UDA dance situation is exploding right now. It's massive. There's pros and cons to it, all of it, but it's huge. There's big marketing come behind it. And then there's a new International Dance League that they're actually making like a ESPN like scoring dance competition that's traveling the world. Teams from Canada, teams from Australia, teams from the United States, like battling on big international stages to compete, to score points, to say who's really the best this year. How do we build this? Because people like to know. There is something that could be said about saying, okay, I'm going to bring my best, you bring your best. And let's see what happens when the dust settles. Let's see what goes down. And you're seeing a lot of that too, with there's a lot of dance styles. It's called Red Bull. Red Bull's huge in the dancing. I mean, Red Bull is sports. Red Bull is massive, but it's on the outside. It's like it's those like hybrid sports that no one really thinks about until you're in it. And you're like, this is its own world. So Red Bull Dance Your Style, one-on-one dance styles. You're going against dancers from Japan, from France, from South America, from Brazil. you don't speak a lick of the same language, but when you dance, all of a sudden we're communicating to each other like its own language. And we are using music as the medium of, this is the battleground, here's our circle. And that's why I love hip hop, because hip hop has that very much that sports type of b-boy was like territorial, like this is our space. When rugby comes out, they do their haka. They start with the haka. It's a full performance dance ritual. My wife's Polynesian, so there's a lot of passion.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
but the haka is basically a war chant, a cry that this is our earth. That's what they're saying. They're saying our earth, our crust, don't dare touch it. We're taking dominance of this crust, this land. Yeah, it's in everything. But that's like where I'm like, I just really love the fact that it all can kind of link and continue to grow. And I think that's why I think this conversation, just for us, you and I, John, to have this conversation, yeah, it just allows me to give you my passion. I live and breathe it. I love it.
We're here with dancer Tony Bellissimo. Speaking of passion, every dancer I've ever known, with no exception, considered Michael Jackson to be the epitome of, you know, a performer who can dance. Or, you know, a performer, when Michael was with us, a performer with whom they wanted to dance, right? And you were just involved in the Michael movie called Michael. Tell us about that experience.
Talk about living my dream. I keep saying this, you know, everyone says living the dream. I got to live my dream. And a lot of dancers, there's a prestigious show called The Nutcracker, which I feel like many people know the story and understand that. For ballet dancers, that's like, you need to know the Nutcracker, like a thespian needs to know Shakespeare. For me, it was knowing Thriller. Thriller was the quote unquote Nutcracker of the Future Dance Center. The Future Dance Center is tradition to perform Thriller. They get the kids together and they perform Thriller all over the city in Buffalo. They performed in many different places, and it's something to be really seen. If you are in the Buffalo area, you have a chance, and I'm going to plug it because it's just important. If you get a chance to see the kids do Thriller from the Future Dance Center, it's a great little show that you can check out and see performance, because these kids do the moves the way that Michael Peters, the choreographer or coach, created it to be said. Now, someone could read a play from John Gruden, XY Banana, right? So you could read his play. But only John Gruden's going to say it like John Gruden. And then it's going to be delivered in the mind of the way he cadences, how his voice goes, his inflection, how it hits. He's going to spit those plays out, and you're going to understand that. And that's a language. That's quarterback coach language. The choreographer language that we learned from Thriller, Denise, she taught us the cadence, the way that Michael Peters choreographed it with Michael Jackson in Debbie Reynolds' dance studio in North Hollywood. The way that he said it is the way that my body moves it. So not just the music, but the way that Michael Peters choreographed it, the cadence. Ba-dum-dum-uh, da-dum-dum-uh, boom-ka-shoo-ha. I can spit the cadence to you. I don't even have to get up to do the moves, and you know I know the whole dance. Then when I came to location to get one fitted, which was the most exciting day. The first day was getting fitted was the most exciting. Getting to be in the shredded clothes and going frame by frame, making sure we're being matched to match the video precisely in how they looked, and trying to really get as close as we possibly can. So then getting into the actual studio, working in the studio with Rich and Tone, the assistant choreographers, and having Jafar in the room with us the entire time. Now you got this young kid with us who has the weight of his shoulders, because he has to emulate not just a family member, not just an entertainer, but the king of pop, the quote unquote best moving performer ever.
And this is his uncle. We should say Jafar is Michael Jackson's nephew.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he played Jafar Jackson. Michael. Yeah. So to see Jafar in our rehearsals with the professional dancers, like John, like a lot of us in the room have resumes that, you know, are stacked with movies and world tours, commercials, and you know, live performances. And you have this kid in here doing some of the most intricate, well choreographed material ever for the most popular music video, movie, mini short of all time. And I actually got caught to tears. I was overflowing with so much love for what he was doing and how he was doing it. It looked crazy to me to be. It's just like, am I looking at something that's that is Michael. Like, it's not, wow. He's not trying to be Michael. He looks like him. Like, I'm looking, I'm like, it was like weird for me to be on that project and having Michael as inspiration. And then the back end of it too, which was, I, as a young kid, went through my own traumas in my life growing up, as everyone does. And it's not like a boo-hoo story. It's more of like a victorious story. How do you rise up out of the dirt side of things? That's where I can't get up and play football in the middle of the night. I can't go up and play lacrosse in the middle of the night. But if I was feeling an abundance of anxiety, and I was having body Tourette's and seizures because I couldn't withstand the amount of energy that was within my body, the Michael Jackson catalog of music was my go-to source. Play that music, dance around my room until I got tired, and kind of work through that dark depressional state as a young kid coming up. And that's just part of my life, but I'm not looking at it as a shadow. I'm looking at it more of like a spotlight of an opportunity for me to dive into music and move. And then Michael's music was just that catalog that I really gravitated to. So to the now, then we shot on the actual location in East LA on the same exact block that Michael Jackson shot Thriller. We are emulating the making of Thriller. It's a full moon night shoot. Moon is on my left-hand side, just rises up. We're in full prosthetic makeup. I've had my makeup painted on my face by a makeup artist named Margaret Bouchera, who's actually one of Rick Baker's makeup artists from the original Thriller. She was on the original Thriller. Now she's painting my face. And I only got to know that by talking to her from sitting in the chair and getting the makeup done, and to go through that process to create the character of how I wanted to be in the zombie. Because Tim, you know that I've taken acting very seriously in my youth as well as dancing, to create the character and really fall into it and be a part of it. Just having that moment of like, oh, wow, I really am doing this. And not only am I doing it for me, this was like, I'm doing it for Buffalo. I'm doing it for the future. I'm doing it for Decent Gino. I'm doing it for my parents. I'm doing it for the, you know, Frontier, let's go Falcons. I'm doing it for everybody who ever watched me perform. I'm now about to be forever encapsulated in this movie about the greatest entertainer ever doing the one short film that broke the world. It's a win for me. I take it as a big W. You know, it's like, as far as like hitting my marks, like Tim, the Super Bowl, another big win for Buffalo for me, right? And like, just getting to these benchmarks. I'm like, eventually we're going to get to a point where I'm going to have another big performance. The Sabres are going to win. I know the Bands did a three-peat. My Bills are going to really bring it home. I just feel like it's right around the corner. And then I'm going to get invited to the Buffalo Bills brand new stadium. And I'm going to do Thriller in front of all the thousands of fans. I think it's possible.
We like that idea.
We heard it here first. That's right.
Being that kid from Buffalo growing up, and playing sports and dancing and finding the balance of both while doing my schoolwork, it's led me to this. It led me to the Michael Jackson movie. Every step, every misstep, every failure, every cut, every victory, you know, every split stitch, anything that I had to go through, broken hand, dislocated finger, whatever it may be, you know, blown out ankle. It's about staying on the path. Yeah. And that, like, I think that, John, you really like longevity. It seems like you like to find about what makes the people stay in longevity.
Yeah.
And it's staying on that path.
Yeah. Tony, as we wrap this up, I think there's a bigger message here too for our listeners. And I don't care if our listeners are 8 or 85, it's, you know, finding that passion, and the word you use is find that, you know, that love. And I think the message here too is, you don't know what it may be. You may think it's lacrosse. You may think it's hockey. You may think it's golf, but try everything and you're going to find that flame. And in your case, I think you nailed it when dance found you, or you found dance. It just, you know, it just sounds like it was a match made in heaven.
Oh, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
No, it's
just really do.
And Tony, as someone who's known you, you know, I think at this point we've known each other, certainly most of your life and most of both of ours. So cool, so incredible, so powerful to see you do what John said, find, you know, find that thing you love, and also find that you are, you know, that you are great, that you can be world class
It's taking that extra free throw practice. It's taking that. It's waking up like you do at 3 a.m. and dancing to Thriller. I mean, it's.
But John and Tim and everyone who's listening, I'm hoping this is going to be geared more to the younger ears. You have to show up willing to learn. You have to come with an idea. You have to come with a goal, a micro goal. And now you have to link those micro victories together to get to the bigger goal in mind. And that has to come from the parents talking that through and highlighting not the results, but the efforts putting forward. That's a huge thing that I would love to encourage. If you are a young parent and you have your kids in sports, like let them try everything like John said. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's looking for programs and things that can also help your child advance forward, finding good mentors to help get them moving forward. Like I'm the director of a dance convention 24/7. I have the privilege of scholarshiping kids, giving them an opportunity to come back and dance for free based on the merit of the efforts and work that they're doing within the audition that they're showcasing. The audition is part of their life. They're also the big part of life where they perform on stage. So there's different aspects of it all, but I think helping kids now moving forward and doing that. And then also now helping young parents who are my peers. I have two kids of my own. I have a very close six-year-old boy who loves golf, loves basketball, loves to run, he can hit a golf ball about 60-yard drive. Pretty beautiful little swing he's got. And a good putter. But to see him then also take him to a dance class, he jumps in the dance, he's having a good time. And I just say, hey, I really like how much you worked in there. Don't care about the result. Don't care. I don't even say how you look. I just really see how I realize how hard you worked in there. The focus you just put forward, that was great focus. Because I don't know where it's going to go, John. Right. I don't know where that's going to go. But I just know that if he knows that if he focuses, he's dedicated, he can remember, he's delivering, he has good etiquette when the coach is talking, I could put him anywhere and he's going to succeed. For me, people ask me, what do you do? I go, I'm a teacher. I'm a coach. They go, what do you coach? What do you teach? I go, I use the platform of dance to help kids follow through and succeed in their goals. I just use dance as the way to break through into their mind and their psyche. I can speak their language to them where they understand it.
I cannot think of a better place to leave it than that.
That was awesome. Yeah. Tony, thanks for representing all of the region here on the biggest stage of all. And can't thank you enough for joining us here on Skin in the Game.
And Tony, a pleasure to talk to you, man. Congratulations on Michael. Congratulations on 24/7. All your success. Keep it going.
You got it. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
I really want to thank Tony Bellissimo for joining us. And Tim, it sounds like you and Tony go back. So give us a little bit, because I wasn't that familiar with Tony's background. I also wasn't familiar with
my dance background,
your journalistic background in the sport of dance. So what's the history there?
Yeah, so we'll start with them. As anyone who's watching this versus listening to this can see, I'm not a dancer. I've never been a dancer. But I was a dance journalist for a long time, John. I wrote for Dance Spirit magazine, and later I joined the Buffalo News as a newspaper features writer. And given that Tony's from Buffalo, wrote about him a bunch there, but also covered him quite extensively. Tony and all of these, many at least, of these world-class dancers in L.A., and these people are like Olympic athletes.
I was just going to say, they are gold medalists of dance.
Oh, they absolutely are. It might be the most exclusive club of athletic people in the world who are performing, on the scale that they are. My job at Dance Spirit as a contributor was, you will get a kick out of this. It was covering backup dancers, hip-hop dancers for the major pop stars of the day, which included the dancers for Hilary Duff, Miley Cyrus, the Jonas Brothers.
Wow, you had
I could keep going. Justin Timberlake, Gwen Stefani, Britney Spears. I found myself backstage in a lot of concerts, backstage at So You Think You Can Dance, where Tony was a contestant.
Right.
And I was also familiar with his dance studio, Future Dance Center in Hamburg, New York, which is one of the leading hip hop studios, not only in upstate New York, but frankly, across the country.
Wow.
They've produced, I think, close to 2 dozen high-level professional LA-based dancers, right? It's just unheard of.
Doesn't have it. Well, I went into the conversation, quite frankly, Tim, not knowing much about dance or competitive dance, and for a lot of reasons, Tony definitely He didn't need to convince me. I'm so impressed by the commitment that these professionals put into their craft. It's the athleticism. It's the time commitment. What I was most impressed and really took from the conversation too with Tony was, you know, how he was really a multi-sport athlete.
Right.
You know, his parents gave him the opportunity to explore a lot of different athletic activities, and he found the spark with dance, but it still checked the box of teamwork. It still mm-hmm. checked the box of competitiveness. Obviously, he also had the talent.
Right.
And I think that's a big lesson here, too, is, you know, getting the children exposed to a lot of different sports and let them find their quote-unquote love, as Tony did with dance.
You know, and there's something we didn't get into with Tony. He was a teenage boy who was a great athlete and a great dancer, and he chose dance.
Right.
Which is not what too many other guys around him were
not stereotypical,
choosing. Right. You know, is that breaking that mold? Is that a tough choice? Is that a big deal? That would be something to ask him about, and we bring him back. Maybe we can get into some of that. But he definitely chose a path that, you know, paid off. But it wasn't the one that, you know, a lot of guys around him were choosing. They were sticking with, you know, the quote unquote traditional or, you know,
pure ball sports.
Right.
But what was interesting is it was his peers that said, you know, Tony, you know, you're a darn good lacrosse player. You could probably play in college, but man, you can be a great dancer.
Yeah.
And that, you know, those were the same peers who may have downplayed dance or, you know, maybe, you know, made fun of him being the only guy in the dance class, but they also recognized that, wow, you've got something special here. You may want to follow that path.
Oh man, did he make dance look so cool.
Yeah, right.
I got to say, my daughter was in that studio, you know, a bunch of years behind him. And I remember she looked up to him. I mean, he was just like this cool, iconic role model personally and, you know, as a performer. Talk about making a career and a life path choice by matching your passion with your aptitude, right? And that's something I find we talk about that, you know, a lot on this show. Yeah. There's so many people who want to work in sports or the, you know, the entertainment industry, which, you know, I believe are similar, if not, you know, conjoined at this point. You've got to find what you love. And if you want to make a career out of it, you need to not only be willing to work at becoming great at it, but you do have to be great at it.
Right.
You know, and he found that.
Definitely at the top of the game. And I also love the fact that, you know, he doesn't consider himself necessarily a professional dancer. It's first, I'm a coach.
Yeah.
I'm a mentor.
Yeah.
And just like we talk a lot about skin in the game, you know, it's the life skills that you learn in these athletic endeavors. It's not about the wins and the losses. It's not about necessarily the medals,
right?
But it's what life skills are you learning, and competitive dance, just like hockey, baseball, or any other sport, delivers on those life skills.
And when his six-year-old son gets in the studio, you know, the dance studio, Tony's not talking to his little boy about how well he performed. He's talking to him about how hard he worked.
Yeah. And by the way, he says, you know, he's playing golf, he's playing other sports. And by the way, I think dance also will contribute to his athleticism on the golf course or on the putting green.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and he's probably, I would venture to say, his son is probably a more graceful golfer from that dance training. Or maybe it might be good genes.
Absolutely.
Tony as his dad. Who knows?
Combination. So again, I want to thank Tony Bellissimo for joining us here at Skin in the Game, representing his hometown of Buffalo, New York.
Proudly.
And also helping bring that next generation of youth into dance and again, learning those life skills.
Yeah. Thank you to Tony for joining us. Thank you to everybody for listening and watching. We'll see you next week.